This is a Triple J podcast.
A really interesting case has been making headlines this week. A group of 10 Australians lodging a complaint with the United Nations Human Rights Committee over Australia's coal and gas exports. Now, this is the first case of its kind to go to the UN since the world's highest court ruled that countries do have a legal obligation to protect the climate and to prevent harm to the climate. So will this lead to anything? And who are the people behind this case? I'm Dave Marchese. This is Hack's Long Listen of the Week, a chat with Pam and Letitia Francis. Culture means everything to Pam and Letitia. They're Narunga, Narangeri and Kaurna women from South Australia. And they say it's hard to even put into words the importance of retaining and passing down traditions, customs and cultural practices.
It was so much more than just the environment, I suppose, to me, having such a close connection to country.
But something's changed lately. Pam and Letitia say toxic algal blooms that have been devastating the waterways of their lands are disconnecting them from who they are.
We need the people in charge to step up and help the people that they're meant to be helping.
So they've joined a group of Australians filing a case with the United Nations, claiming climate change is impacting their human rights and the government is not doing enough about it.
It is a bit scary, but also at the same time, it's a necessary step in action that we've had to take.
So what's turned these siblings to such drastic action, and do they think they actually have a chance at forcing some change? Well, here's my chat with Pam and Letitia Francis on their climate change fight. Pam and Letitia Francis, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
Thanks for having us.
Letitia, I might start with you in this chat. Can you explain a little bit about this case, like what exactly you're accusing the Australian government of?
So this case is a group of 10 regular everyday people coming together to talk about their experiences with the climate crisis, whether that be through flood, bushfire, the algal bloom in our case. And we're coming together to ask the Albanese government to stop exporting coal and gas and also stop allowing new mines to be open here in Australia, because they have a responsibility to protect us as everyday people, and they're failing that responsibility right now.
It's a really interesting concept to have, like, people from different parts of the country with different experiences of the impacts of climate change. Pam, why did you want to get involved in this?
You know, as Tisha just said, it's important to us that our lands are protected and that, you know, we have healthy country for future generations to come.
And I'm sure your kind of work life plays a little bit into this as well, as well as like some of the cultural stuff. Letitia, you're studying marine science, is that right?
Yeah, so I'm studying a Bachelor of Science in Wildlife and Marine Conservation Biology.
And so that means that the algal bloom stuff you're particularly interested in, not just because it's impacting your personal life, but you can sort of understand what's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, when the algal bloom first started, it was really interesting to be in a classroom in a university setting, because a lot of the time, like, we'll talk about real everyday issues that are happening in the environment, as you do in those spaces, and the algal bloom did come up on numerous occasions. There was a lot of our professors saying, like, they don't know how the ecosystem will ever recover from this or what's going to happen with the next steps. And that's so distressing from a First Nations perspective as well, because it was so much more than just the environment, I suppose, to me, having such a close connection to country. Hearing them say that it might not ever recover is just, it was absolutely heartbreaking sitting in that type of an environment and then wondering what will be of my community and my people and all of this environment.
Can I ask about your connection to culture? Because Pam, I know you teach Aboriginal children about culture. How big of a your life is it? Like, how big of a part of your life is culture, and how important is it to you?
It's every part of me and Tish. Like, it's culture is our everything and our everyday, and we are really truly immersed in our culture, and everything we do, we bring, you know, our culture with us. I have been over the last few years learning Kaurna language, which is our traditional language. And I've been a part of the revitalization project on it, and you know, we lost a lot of Kaurna language, and it's sad to think that maybe we're gonna have to have something like that for our sea country, you know, if actions aren't gonna be taken. So yeah, everything we do is literally culture, our whole lives. We've dedicated all of our, I know we're only young, but we've dedicated our whole lives, and all of our work that we do is literally all for our culture.
Can you tell us a bit about the role country has played in your childhood and growing up?
We are always on country, a little less now as adults, and what's going on, you know, in our country, and it's hard to be down that way, you know, when the algal blooms on and, you know, we have extreme heat and that sort of stuff, so it's a bit hard to be on country. I just remember trying to avoid being indoors as much as I can growing up, and, you know, being out on our country and doing everything, all of our cultural stuff out there. And, yeah, I love that. As a kid, I thrive doing that sort of stuff. And, yeah, I try to get back to it as much as I can.
Yeah.
And what sort of stuff are you doing there, and are you being taught on country? Like, for people who don't understand, you're talking about the disruption that the algal bloom has had on your connection with country. So what kind of stuff are you missing out on?
This is just one example. Our community does a butterfish competition every year where young men and, you know, even our senior elder men go out and do our traditional practices of catching butterfish, and then they bring them in to the community afterwards, and we hold an awards process, biggest butterfish, you know, youngest butterfish person that's caught it, which was my little brother a couple of years ago, which was really cool. And yeah, we haven't been able to hold that, and also when they bring the butterfish back, you know, the young girls learn how to cook and do all that sort of stuff. And yeah, we're missing out on that and haven't been able to do that. And I have a few little brothers, and that was the only bit of, you know, fishing and that sort of stuff that he's learnt, and he hasn't been able to learn any more of that. And even younger brothers haven't been able to learn any of that. So yeah, it's really, really sad.
So are you worried, both of you, that basically that people aren't, the young ones especially, aren't going to learn these skills because they just don't have access to the waterways like they should?
Yeah, that's definitely a real fear, that the younger generation isn't going to be able to do these things, and they're not going to have that part of country to be a part of. And our old people that pass down this knowledge and that we learn from aren't going to be around forever. And unfortunately, whilst the algal bloom's been on, we have lost members of our community that did hold knowledge, and we just aren't going to be able to get that knowledge back. And even with me and Pam being so, like, not really that much older than the younger generation that we're talking about, it's only 12 years between us and our oldest younger brother, but the country that we had as children has changed so much from what he had. I remember just being able to spend the whole summer out during school holidays with our grandfather, and we'd go jumping off the jetty and just spending every waking minute in the water with him. And our younger siblings don't have that opportunity now because of the algal bloom, and the fear is that he will pass away before this passes, and then they don't have those memories or that experience or the knowledge that gets taught by that country. Mm-hmm. We're going to lose it, and it's a really scary reality.
You know, our grandfather is getting up there in age, and, you know, we really don't know how long we have left with him. The way our people pass knowledge is by being on country and immersed in country, and you know, the right time to share those stories. And at the moment, with, you know, the current crisis of the climate, we don't actually get many of those opportunities and time where it is right to share and pass down knowledge and stories. You know, a lot of our time at the moment is talking about how do we keep our people safe. It's really sad, and I suppose that's another reason why we're on this case, is because we can't do this by ourselves and alone, and we need the people in charge to step up and help
I want to ask a bit about the kind of impacts that you believe climate change is having on the lives of you, your loved ones already. But first, I want to ask when you noticed that something wasn't right, like in terms of this algal bloom, when was stuff a bit different?
Elders, they noticed, you know, that our oceans weren't looking quite right, and, you know, we're sick well before anyone else did, and, you know, told us, hey, stay away from there, you know, let's figure out what's going on before we go and get in there and do our stuff, because, you know, they could tell that it was sick. And, you know, we spent a lot of time down at the beach and on our country, and we went down there and it was just, it smelt funny, and there was just thick foam and you know, a beautiful blue water just was, you know, grey and green and not very nice, and sand was sticking to us. We come away with rashes, and it was just really terrible.
There was just dead fish and sea animals all across the beach, like, and it smelt like, you know, what dead sea animals smell like. It stinks. And for Ks and Ks and Ks, just hundreds of dead sea animals. It was also like a ghost town. There was no one there, which is so strange. Specifically here in South Australia, we have such a beach community, and all of the stuff that we do basically here in SA is all around the water. So like for there to be no people, it just felt like everything was dead.
Did the older people tell you whether something like this had happened before? Like, have they said this is something they haven't seen?
This was something that none of them had ever seen before. This was not normal. And it was so distressing to hear that from our old people, and then for the Australian government, because when the algal bloom first started, we got so many mixed messages from the Australian government about what to do, what was okay. The Australian government was saying, oh no, it's totally fine to be near the water. And then our old people were like, no, stay away from the water, like you're going to get sick. And then following that, the Australian government actually came back with saying, oh no, stay away from the water, like you will get sick. And then we started to see it with like people's dogs were starting to die from them walking them on the beach and all of those types of things. So it was like we were getting the message from our elders in our community, which is what we followed. But then the South Australian government was sending a whole nother message, and it was just such a confusing time.
Yeah, and we still don't really know much about the algal bloom. We don't actually know anything that's going to come out of this. We don't know, you know, if the algae bloom is going to make people sick, you know, in 20 years' time from it, or, you know, if we will actually recover, you know, any of our sea life that has died, and, you know, if it will ever go away, and if we will be able to return into the water safely like we used to. Like, it's still really a confusing time.
Does it feel like this problem with the algal bloom is getting enough attention with the rest of the country?
No. I don't feel like it is. It is something that's impacting everyone's lives in community and all around SA. Businesses are still suffering. People are suffering with their mental health in particular as well. Like, we go out to the beach when it's hot in the summer. That's what we do. We go and spend time on the beach. We go for a dip in the water. But also with increased heat waves, it's been like 40-something degrees here in South Australia for week-long periods. So along with the algal bloom, we've been stuck indoors, not being able to go out and just have fun at the beach or learn our cultural knowledge. And that has such a strain just on the everyday person's mental health, not being able to go outside at all during the time when that's when we're meant to be spending the most time outdoors.
So you and a group of other Australians have lodged this complaint with the United Nations Human Rights Committee, and you're wanting Australia to end its coal and gas exports. There might be some people who are listening now saying, can you link the coal and gas exports with what you're talking about and this algal bloom? What do you say to that?
No matter where Australia is exporting their coal and gas around the world, it can still come back in the form of climate impacts here on Australian
soil.
And
it does.
It does. And we've seen that in the algal bloom and increased bushfires, and all of the other claimants that are on this case as well have experienced that. And they can be linked through scientific research to the climate crisis. No matter where it's burned, it still has an impact on us here. And people are suffering and people are dying from what's happening right now.
When people hear about climate change, they genuinely think of, you know, these big impacts that are happening, it getting hotter and that sort of stuff. But, you know, there is everyday life that is being impacted, and if they really, you know, looked at it, they would probably also realize that they are being impacted by climate change, and I think that says a lot.
Pam, Letitia, the government is saying, look, it's investing a lot in renewable energy, it's got climate targets, it's saying that, you know, there's got to be this balance between climate action and having a safe, reliable energy supply. What would be your response to that?
We're not asking the Australian government to completely cut off what they're doing right now in this moment. We know the impacts that will have on everyday Australians and what that looks like. We're asking them to stop making new mines and giving more to the issue that we're all facing. We want them to take responsibility for what's happening and create a just transition so no one gets left behind.
How does it feel to be part of something so big, like to be going to the United Nations and to be joining up with other people from across the country? Was that like a scary thought at first?
It is a bit scary, but also at the same time, it's a necessary step in action that we've had to take, myself in particular. I don't and haven't felt heard by the Albanese government. So yes, although it was a little bit scary at first, I realised, you know, how important it is that we take this step. And to be honest with you, we're not trying to divide anyone or anything. We are trying to work together because that's what it's going to take to come up with these solutions that we need.
You've recently been in Canberra actually meeting with some politicians and talking about this case. What was that like, and what's the response been like over the past few days?
Over the last couple of days, we've had a fair amount of interviews and talking to people and that sort of stuff. And it seems to be, you know, all right. Everyone that we've talked to know what's going on and well aware of the climate crises that we're at. And but, you know, prior to this and being, you know, in Parliament House, it hasn't been a very welcoming space.
Yeah, I feel like the meetings that we've had have been good. But previously being in Parliament and doing this type of advocacy work, it can be a lot. And sometimes it feels like our voices aren't heard and that we need to work really hard to have that happen. This time, it feels like all of them are very receptive. Previously, though, it hasn't felt like that. And unfortunately, that is why we've had to go to the UN, because a lot of us have tried to reach out to our local members and have tried to advocate. And we just don't feel like we were being heard by the Australian government and the Albanese government in what our needs are and how to move forward. So we didn't want to have to go to the UN, but unfortunately that's what it's come down
to. Yeah, we've had to do that, and it is a big thing, and hopefully everyone that we've spoke to jumps on board.
What's the best case scenario here? Because, you know, this is the first legal claim taken to an international body or court since a big ruling by the world's highest court that countries can be sued over climate change. Is that what you'd be hoping for?
Well, we're not actually suing the Australian government. I think that's really a really important part of this. We are just taking our stories and that to the government and asking that they stop burning coal and gas and listen to the people of Australia.
And with more of those law type of stuff, that's more for our lawyers. We are here as everyday people, as young Indigenous women, to tell our story and how the climate crisis has affected us. The actual legal ramifications after this is completely in the lawyers' hands. They know what they're doing, and that this is going to put Australia on the global stage. It's going to put them up in front of the world and say, hey, we need you guys to do something. And unfortunately, sometimes it does take that little bit of an extra push to put them on the global stage and be like, this is what we're experiencing as everyday people.
Pam and Letitia, there'd be a lot of young Australians listening to you now who'd be pretty impressed and like inspired by what you're doing and maybe looking up to you. How does that feel?
Yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking. sometimes, but I always think, you know, I also look up to a lot of young people, and I think, you know, our young ones are getting the courage and strength to do what's right. But it's a little less nerve-wracking knowing that, you know, I am doing what's right for my people and community. So
it's such a great privilege to be able to be that type of a person for a young person. And yeah, like Pam said, it is nerve-wracking and it does apply a lot of pressure. But we are still learning, very much so, and we're just telling our story. And every other young person that would potentially be listening can know that, like, there is so much value in their lived experience as a young person, and no one else before them have had to deal with nearly as much climate crisis as what they're going through. You know, the increased bushfires, the floods, like, they aren't alone in how they're feeling, and their voice is so valuable to this fight.
Well, look, it's been so interesting to hear about your experience. And like I said, there's a lot of people who are going to be really inspired by what you're doing and going to be really interested in hearing how it all goes. Pam and Letitia Francis, really appreciate you speaking with us on Hack.
Yeah, and thank you for having us here and listening to our stories.
Yeah, very interesting chat there with Pam and Letitia. And I should say that Hack reached out to the government for a response, get their take on what is going on here. And a government spokesperson said Australia takes its international human rights law obligations very seriously, and it engages in good faith with human rights treaty bodies. So we'll make sure we do keep you up to date with any developments in this story. I know a lot of you will be really interested. And remember, if you do want to keep up to date with this and other stories, subscribe to this podcast. You can also go and follow us on socials at Triple J Hack on Instagram and TikTok. But that is all for now. I'll catch you next time.
Hack.